The risk of oversharing. It's something artists who mine aspects of their personal lives for their work really have to think about. Let Me Be Frank is the title of Wellington novelist and cartoonist Sarah Lang's latest book, a survey of her comics from 2010 till now. She reflects candidly on her family life and her cartoons, and that's what makes them so relatable to so many people. But it's also lost Sarah a few friends along the way. I asked Sarah Lang what made this the right time for her comics retrospective.
I think it was because I had produced so many comics. It's because I had drawn thousands of pages of them. I sort of compulsively drew them, you know. And when I first started out, I'd only draw a page or two. And then the more I drew, the more I wanted to draw. So my comics were turning into these epic tales, you know. 4 pages became the norm, and then 10 pages became the norm, and then I wrote a 352-page graphic memoir. And so it just kind of, to me, it seemed there's something a little bit ephemeral and easily forgotten about work on the internet. Like, even though it's there and it's always accessible, it just kind of takes almost too much effort to dig back through the archives. And so I did want to select some of the best of my comics and put them into a book, so it was an artifact. I think also because my life had changed. My children had got too old for me to really justify writing comics about them anymore.
I love you had an image of one of them with their hand up, like it was for a phone. Don't take my photograph, Mum.
And also, I think I mentioned, at the end of the book as well, I had separated from my husband as well. So this was very much a kind of a time in my life where my children were very young and things were very intense, and my need to write was at its most urgent as well, perhaps because I didn't have any time and I didn't have any freedom, and that was when I most wanted to be an artist. And so it kind of seemed like the right time to encapsulate it all in a book and make it into something.
Your children gave you plenty of material, and I'm sure every parent on the planet, you know, but given that they are older now, do they talk to you about the comics? Do they read them?
Read the comics, and they I did. In particular, I went and gave my eldest all of the comics that I was planning on putting into the book, and told him to read them, and I told him that he had the right to veto any of them. And he was quite interested in reading them all, and quite accepting of them, and there was only one that he vetoed. So I was really pleased about that. And the children used to love it when I wrote comics about them, and in fact they kind of were a little bit annoyed that I'm not writing comics about them anymore. They're like, why don't you write a comic about this, Mum? Why don't you? I think they kind of liked the idea that what they were doing could be turned into a story, or that they could show their friends that there they were on the internet. So famous. Yeah.
Well, this is how things have changed, and you reflect on this. Let Me Be Frank is kind of one of the things you're riffing on here. And in the essay that I was reading that you've written along with this is how much to share. I mean, this is so frank and so open, this collection. I feel like I know you so well through your comics. But you've clearly sat back and thought, is there anything I can't share? Is there anything I shouldn't share? Have I shared too much?
Yeah, well, it's sort of interesting. I do find it really interesting looking back at the comics, because my middle child, probably when he was about 7, got an autism and an ADHD diagnosis. And I don't explicitly talk about that in the book at all. And I don't write comics about that. But looking back at the early comics, it's like, oh, yeah, actually, quite a lot of the behaviour that he was displaying is quite obvious telltale signs that he actually was on the autism spectrum. And, you know, in a way, I kind of feel like that's not really, you know, my story. Now I'm telling you on the radio, but I kind of feel as though it's not really my story to tell, and that, you know, that will probably take some space and some time and some, you know, reflection. But so I think that there's probably, although it kind of appears as though I'm sharing everything about my life, there is also like quite a lot that I'm choosing not to share. And you can't write about everything.
But the response you get, Sarah, is because what you do chronicle in your comics is so relatable. You know, as a mum with 3 kids, so busy, you're wanting to write, so you're wanting to spend energy there, and a relationship, all of these things. It's kind of, your parents come to visit, oh my God, I've got to tidy the house. That was one of my favourites. You know, and you have had such a personal response. Even you write about being surprised, I think, about how much response you got from people who could identify.
Yeah, well, I mean, and also, I mean, it is kind of a fine, I found it's a bit of a fine line. The closer that I, you know, stood towards, you know, personal humiliation and oversharing and, you know, divulging too much about myself, the greater response I would get. So it was like a very, a dangerous little place to be walking along, because the more vulnerable you made yourself and the more that you revealed, the more in danger you felt of, you know, somebody going, oh my God, who is this crazy woman? And, you know, why is she telling us all of this stuff? So, yeah, I mean, it is, I did feel as though it was a kind of a risky business, but the payoff was that if I did, you know, reveal my vulnerabilities and the things that, you know, I felt deeply insecure or self-conscious about, often people would say, I feel the same. And that would make me feel less alone. It would make me feel as though there were other people who could see me and I could see them. And, you know, we shared this sensibility and we shared the same anxieties. And so, yeah, it was sort of, it seemed like a risk worth taking in order to make a connection with my readers and my friends. I mean, often I was just drawing the comics for my friends, because I had a lovely group of people that I knew, and I'd post my comics on Facebook, and, you know, I'd been to their houses and I knew their children and I knew all about their lives, and I'd post it and they'd go, oh my God, I love that comic, and that happened to me, and can I tell you my story? And yeah, so that was the reward for me perhaps exposing myself a little bit too much.
I think you lost a couple of friendships too, and you're very open about that. I mean, as a writer, as a creative, as an artist, you are a magpie, you know.
Yeah.
Everything is out there.
Yeah, no, I did discover that. I think when I first started out, I think I thought that everything was fair game, and that if somebody said some, you know, random things at a party to me, I mean, they were hilarious things, and I had to write them down. I had to go and preserve them, because, yeah, that was like, everybody needed to know how hilarious they were. And then, you know, I would be confronted afterwards going, actually, I did not say that because I wanted it publicly broadcast in the world. I said that in a party where I imagined all the words would just disappear and evaporate, and you've gone and written it down. That's not what I intended these words to, you know, that was not my intention for these words. So it was, I did learn that, again, that some stories were not mine to tell. And in a way, it kind of actually made me, you know, like, I've sort of spent a long time on comics, and I'm not at all putting comics aside because I do really love them as a medium, but it did actually make me want to go back into fiction, because there are just so many extraordinary things that people say and do that I just desperately want to write about, and I can't because I'll just lose more friends. So, yeah, I think I should just probably, you know, slightly transpose it and turn it into material for the next novel that I write instead. Yeah. And then everybody can just say, was that me? Was that me she used? And, yeah.
So do you have time for writing, or do you find that that words and drawing on a day, you might decide which one you want to do? Are there some things that work better in comics and some things that work better in text?
Yeah, no, I definitely think that some things lend themselves more easily to comics. And comics was definitely something that I turned to as a vehicle, a medium, a platform for me to express something really, really quickly. I mean, my style is quite loose and quite gestural, and, you know, it's not, I'm not super uptight. In fact, I often draw really badly, and I go and post my terrible pictures on the internet shamelessly, but I kind of feel as though it's sort of like a kind of a medium which just allows a lot of spontaneity and a lot of roughness, and so it is, yeah, comics are a really good, really good vehicle for a story that you want to tell quickly. Whereas, you know, if you want to have something far more finely crafted, then you'd, you know, lock yourself away in your office and throw your phone out the window and smash your router with a sledgehammer and craft your words. I mean, obviously, and your graphic novel as well. I mean, there are some amazing graphic novelists who are completely obsessive and do exquisite artwork that takes them years and years to complete. So, yeah, but perhaps not me.
I was really moved by the cartoons, Sarah, where you've created a delusion monster, essentially. You know, this monster that kind of talks to you about, I want to be a writer. No, you're deluded. You're not good enough. This whole thing about anxiety and self-doubt that seems to plague most of our creatives. But to epitomise it, did it come naturally, that creation, you know, that you see delusion in a visual form that you created for the comic?
Yeah, maybe. I think I have an overdeveloped inner critical voice. So I think it seemed like quite a fun thing to turn it into a strange monster. So, yeah.
But you hear this doubt? Is this doubt always with you? I mean, you've certainly had success. Your name's on, you know, publications. You've done really well.
Yeah, no, I do. I mean, I think that is something, the whole self-doubt is something that has plagued me. And I'm hoping that I'm getting better at it now that I'm in my mid-40s. I'm hoping that I'm getting better at just saying, oh, just shut up and stop bugging me. But in a way, I do have to sort of remove it from myself and imagine it to be some kind of a strange, slightly ridiculous looking creature that I can, you know, shove on the snout and lock in a box and throw down to the bottom of the ocean. Because, yeah, no, definitely the inner critic has, plagued me my whole life, yeah. Making it a little bit difficult for me to enjoy my successes because I, you know, always kind of a little bit worried that they're not actually real and that actually, you know, only one person said they liked it. Not everybody said they liked it. So, you know, it's been very much a process for me to be able to say, actually, no, it's okay. And that's just the stupid voice in my head. And I enjoy making and drawing things, and that's where I ought to find the pleasure, and that's where I ought to, you know, find the satisfaction, rather than constantly seeking approval from outside and constantly being barraged with criticism by almost an imaginary critical friend. So, yeah.
You've got different. You work with colour, you work with black and white. As you say, some are very minimally drawn and others are a bit more detailed. So you've played with the form, you've experimented with the form yourself, I think.
Definitely. I have tried all sorts of different techniques. I mean, I keep on trying to get better at drawing because I'm constantly plagued by this, you know, anxiety that I'm not a very good drawer. But I think that also I quite often watercolour my pictures because that's, again, quite a quick way of, you know, adding a lot of vividness to an image. And because my style, again, is quite splashy and messy, it's, you know, it's quite forgiving. But at the moment, I'm painstakingly digitally colouring an image which is going to be a mural for the Verb Festival. It's a talking mural and all of the speech bubbles are blank and the public are invited to fill the speech bubbles with the dialogue. They think that the characters in the mural are all speaking. So all the colours are very flat and very pristine. And yeah, I'm kind of perhaps hoping to achieve a style a little bit different from what you'll see in this book here.
You mentioned that you're thinking now about, you know, returning to fiction writing. What are you wanting to write about? Are you going in a completely different...
I'm a big sucker for contemporary fiction. That's what I often will turn to. I'm kind of really interested in the world as it stands now. So I mean, I'm just planning on writing a novel from the perspective of a female perspective novel, from the perspective of a woman, and just a really contemporary novel. So that's where my interest lies. It's all in my head. I actually am yet to open up my computer and start the document, but I will. I've just gone down to 4 days of 4 days work a week, and I'll have a writing day again. So I'm kind of hoping to re-establish my writing practice. I do also have elaborate plans for a kind of a semi-historical graphic novel as well, which is entirely made up and not at all autobiographical. Everything that I want to do now is entirely made up and not autobiographical.
You mind enough of your life?
I have. Well, you know, I could endlessly mind my life, but I think it's probably now time for me to stop. So for a bit anyway. So I am, hoping that with my special writing day, I will be able to make a start on either one of those projects.
Let Me Be Frank, Comics 2010 to 2019 by Sarah Lang, is published by Victoria University Press.